All right, we're back. And this week, Paul and I are going to spend a good part of the beginning of the first half of this episode talking about responding to a question that a listener sent us over email. So keep those questions coming. Those are the great one. It really stokes some conversation and kind of led on to the other things we're going to talk about, which is that question revolved around the U.S. dollar, deglobalization, the de-dollarization of the U.S. dollar globally, et cetera, and the ramifications and what our thoughts are. But then it led into a couple other things. Paul, what else did we hit on today?
Yeah, we took some stuff away from our conference that we were at together a couple weeks ago. And whether that was AI in the life insurance industry, you know, what is the future of AI in the industry? Are we about to be put out to pasture as IBC guys, life insurance agents? We talk about that at the end. We talked about some other takeaways from the conference. Company strength, you're not buying just an illustration. So this is, we say this a lot. You're not just buying an illustration, you're buying the company. You're buying the leadership of the company. You're buying its investment portfolio, and the culture is probably the most important thing you're buying. Yeah. So, know that and think about those things as you go through your process with your agent. And then we just talked about some, how people that own whole life insurance are just, they feel financially more secure, more so than people that don't own it. And the bottom line that, is that banking should be the first thing you're thinking about in the order of financial operations before investing, before speculation, is building a warehouse of wealth. See what I did there? A pool of capital that you can bank with. Practice family banking, practice the infinite banking concept. But that should be the first thing you should do.
Enjoy. Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. All right, welcome back, everybody. Hey, Paul, you got some new digs in the background there. How's the in-between life?
Yeah, it's something else. So for those you don't know, I just moved to Tennessee in a town called Merville. It's Maryville, but they say Merville.
Merville.
And we're in a 1,000-square-foot, like a duplex type of situation. Type of thing, two bedroom, two bath, and three cars in this tiny driveway. One in the garage, but two cars in the driveway. Anyway, it's something else. But it's cozy, and we're all getting to know each other even better than we already did as a family of four, and the two dogs. But on the bright side, I'm close to things, and my utility bills are extremely low because this place is small.
Yeah. Well, and it's going to make moving into your new house even all that much better because you're going from that to the new place.
Yeah, exactly. So it's and we're close. So we checked out the house today and discovered a couple of the rooms were painted the wrong color, but we like the color. This is like the kids' bedrooms or something. It's supposed to be agreeable gray, and they're
like, how do they mess that stuff up? I don't get it,
dude.
I really don't.
I don't know, but I feel like I could crush this business just with a couple of people that care and just some.
Right.
Militarize it a little bit, operationalize it. Just, hey, subcontractor, just so you know, like, this house is agreeable gray. And in the bathrooms, it's agreeable gray, but satin instead of
maybe
flat.
Just write it on the sheetrock.
It's on the walls.
Before they paint. Just write it.
It's on the walls, but somehow, like.
That's crazy.
We don't even know what color the kids' rooms and bathrooms are, because their bathrooms were supposed to be a certain color and. So we're checking on that, but we like the color, so we're not going to have them change it. Yep. And it's a better paint. It's satin rather than flat. But when I go to touch it up, it's going to be a pain in the butt because you can't
touch up well.
You got to touch. Yeah, it's impossible, right? So anyway, it'll be nice
to have that process over with, man.
I can't wait for it to be done.
Yeah.
But we did decide to add a cold plunge to our pool, as I told you earlier. So that's going to be fun. It's going to be 4x6, so we can all get in it.
Yeah, after experiencing the one in Puerto Rico, you guys had to have one, huh?
Had to have it. So it's gonna be
cool. Awesome, anyway. Man. Well,
so we
let's jump in. What do you say?
Yeah,
we got a good email, a good question from a listener, and I'll just read it off.
Yeah,
his name is Eric. So Eric, thank you for the question. He says, "Hi, Dave and Paul. I've been a listener to your podcast for the last 18 months or so, and enjoy learning from your perspective. I'm quite familiar with the concept of IBC, and several years ago converted one of my term policies into a permanent overfunded whole life policy structured for this purpose. All right, good for you. I've been considering converting additional policies in the future. Good, as you should. I think we would both agree.
Yes.
While I understand the value of building equity inside of these policies, I have concerns about over-allocating into USD, United States dollar. I have yet to find anyone in the industry, including your podcast, who adequately addresses this issue. Specifically, the weakening of the US dollar, the trend of global de-dollarization, and anticipated rising US deficit spending makes holding too much allocation in USD unattractive. Since IBC requires transacting and committing to USD for equity, I can't get comfortable allocating any further into whole life or IBC. I'm interested if you guys have any comments or would consider addressing this in an upcoming podcast episode. Thanks for your consideration. Well, Eric, thank you for the email. It sounds like you're somebody who definitely pays attention to things and is a critical thinker and asks those probing questions that need to be asked. So, Paul, why don't you go with your initial thoughts to this question?
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, some of that's paying attention. So good on you for that. I would say one comment on your email. You're not overfunding a policy. You're properly funding it or paying the appropriate amount of premium. You can't overfund a whole life policy. I think that's an universal life term. But anyway, good on you. I think you should convert more of your term and you should convert it through us. Those are my initial thoughts. Anyway, that being said, I've heard this, you know, you can go on YouTube and watch these are probably influencers talking about these things or people who have something to gain about, you know, if you're going to go buy some sort of crypto, maybe that's something that you do. I don't know. I don't really play in that realm at all. But I'll say this. Are your concerns invalid? I don't think so. Is it something that we worry about? No, I don't. You know, when you bought your house, for example, or you bought your, you know, maybe you bought a classic car or you bought an investment property, whatever you bought, you know, what was it denominated in? It was denominated in US dollars because that, you know, that is the currency of the United States. If you offer me US dollars, I have to take them. I don't have to take your Bitcoin or your seashells or your cigarettes or your tobacco or whatever. Right, but I do have to take your U.S. dollars in exchange for services or some other value. So not something that really concerns me. Am I aware of everything that you said in the email? Absolutely. Do I pay a ton of attention to it? No, I don't. And Dave will get into a little bit why. We've recently heard some people pretty high up in certain companies and some other people who respect in the industry who are, you know, academics or economists talk about this very thing and they don't have any concerns as well. A lot of the Austrians that are out there in the wide, wide world are concerned about, you know, the de-dollarization and the amount of money printing that's going on. And of course, we're all concerned about those things, but everything is denominated in US dollars in this country. And, you know, that's what the banks are denominated in. That's what you have to exchange for services. So until something changes with that, I'm going to continue paying a ton of whole life insurance premium and passing as many dollars as I can through policies so that I can do and the things that I want to do and do the opportunities that I want to participate in and protect my family as appropriate. So I think it's important, Dave, to not confuse you know, people are misunderstanding what money is. It's a medium of exchange, right?
Yeah.
We know it's a fiat currency and it's, you know, it's quote worthless, but it's not worthless because I have to take it from you and you have to take it from me. So, you know, and we can't control any of those things either.
Right. I think the question I would ask, kind of like we always say when people are saying, you know, what's the risk or what's the return I get in that? Or why is this better? The answer is compared to what? So what's the alternative? That's why I think this concern about global de-dollarization or the US dollar going away as a global currency, it's much ado about nothing. you know, the media loves to stoke panic, loves to stoke fear. There's people that sell precious metals, and that's part of their shtick, is they have to say the dollar's worthless, you need to buy metals. There's people that, you know, focus on crypto. The dollar's worthless, you got to buy crypto. Everybody's got an angle.
Yep.
Now, what's the alternative? What other currency in the world is going to take the place of the dollar in the foreseeable future? The yen? Like, what other? So we heard it said really, really well by the chief investment officer of a Fortune 500 company we just listened to.
Yep.
Who kind of answered the same question. And we're not actually taking anything from him, because the answer he gave aligns with the way you and I were already thinking on this topic. Sure. To begin with. But he says, what other country are you going to trust? The United States is the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket. Right. By far. What other country's currency would you trust more than the United States? And that's not to promote that the United States government is completely trustworthy. They're absolutely not.
No.
But I wouldn't trust another country any more than I trust the U.S. We are the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket. And the dollar's not going anywhere anytime soon. That's my humble opinion. I'm not an economist. I'm not a professional in this area, but you asked for our opinion. That's my opinion.
Yep. And I'll say this too, spot on. But when you look at, you know, corporations or banks, you know, they own billions of life insurance type products, whether it's universal life, whole life, annuities, you know, pension risk transfer with annuities is a big thing in corporate America now. That's all valued in dollars. It's a good discussion to have. It's a good, you know, thought, kind of gets us thinking, but again,
another thing you said, it's valued in dollars. It could be valued in, as our good friend Ryan Grigg said, it could be valued in bananas. It doesn't matter, because what happens, let's go worst case scenario, the dollar collapses and it doesn't exist. It goes the way of the Deutschmark. And it doesn't exist, and it gets replaced by something else. Well, does that that house you're living in right now, that your primary residence that you're paying a mortgage on, does that go to zero? No. Does that real estate property that you invested in, does all that wealth disappear? No. It just gets redenominated into a new currency.
Whatever the medium of exchange.
And whole life insurance should be no different. It's an asset. It's an asset class, you know. It's tier one
private property.
It's a private property, and it will be denominated into whatever currency takes its place, the dollar's place.
And I think that's the great takeaway: is what currency actually is sort of separate from, you know, it's going to be valued in that currency, whatever that is: seashells, tobacco. You're looking through history. So, and you know, people like gold, they like precious metals, they like crypto, but all those things to have utility have to revert back to dollar. You sell your gold for dollars.
Yeah.
Or maybe you exchange it for other precious metals or something. You know, maybe upgrade to platinum or something, but whatever. But either way, to go transact at your grocery store, what are you giving them? You're not giving them Bitcoin, you're giving them US fiat Federal Reserve notes.
Right.
Every time.
And as long as that currency is still used to transact in this country, my capital has to reside somewhere. And I'd much rather it reside inside a properly structured dividend paying whole life insurance policy with a very trusted and well-established mutual life insurance company than in a commercial bank. It's just a fact. And I need those dollars to transact in this country, to go seize opportunities. I like what Nelson says in Warehouse of Wealth. He says, the commercial he saw, the pamphlet he got that's selling him silver coins and gold coins, telling you that the dollar's worthless and you need to buy these gold coins. Well, what does that person want in exchange for the gold coin? They want your worthless fiat dollar.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Funny. Yeah.
That's odd.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. It's more about the utility than anything else. It's they have to take it.
Yeah. And you mentioned utility. I like that too, because there's also the whole thing, you know, we're not crypto experts, but
gold, same thing. Precious metals, they have no utility.
Yeah.
In the everyday life of the average, the typical person, precious metals have zero utility.
It's a parking lot. It's a parking lot for your money. That's what it is. Yep. Unless you have enough in the right format where you can actually leverage that with a bank for an asset loan, a cash loan to go, you know, what kind of loan are you going to get from the bank? A cash loan to go buy assets with cash.
With US dollars.
Yeah. But you could leverage precious metals like that. If you had enough, you could get a bullion account. You got to have a whole lot. I doubt anybody listening to our show has that kind of money. But I think throughout history, my take on crypto, because a lot of people bring that up, and I don't have a problem with people who want to put a certain percentage of their wealth accumulation capital into something like speculation, like crypto, right? Go ahead and speculate with a small percentage of your wealth. But realize it is speculation. One thing I look at crypto compared to all the other kind of currencies that have been used throughout the history of man is crypto has no intrinsic value. You can't do anything with it, right? Like gold, God's money, silver, like that's used in actual the production of goods. Salt was a currency at one point. I mean, salt has incredible value.
Yep.
Can't live without it. Value. Right. Right. Your body needs it. So
can't live without it.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. So I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with treating it as a speculative investment if you're treating it as the end all be all and it's become a religion to you, much like being a CrossFitter or a you know a vegan. Then you know that's on you. But I would never do that myself. But again, we're not investment advisors. This is not investment advice. I'll just throw that out there, but we like having our money where it's liquid, where it's accessible, where it grows, guaranteed.
And it's private.
And it's private. Nobody knows how much I have. I don't think anybody can figure that out.
They could guess, but that's the other thing that, you know, you're keeping, so I'll say this to end kind of on this question, but you're keeping your dollars somewhere, seemingly you're in the bank, or it's either in a bank, and I'll say bank is it's in a 401, it's in some sort of retirement vehicle, retirement account, IRS created, government created account, which is like a 401k, IRA, or something like that, or it's in a savings account, or a CD, or a checking account, or a money market account, or it's in gold or silver or some other precious, you know, whatever it is, but it's being. The value itself is being kept somewhere. It's just what form is it in? In any form, it's going to go back to what we currently have, which is US dollars, so that you can exchange it for goods and services down the road. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. And I also like ownership. I like equity. I like owning. I think I've mentioned this channel before, this the School of the Hard Knocks that I follow on Instagram.
Yeah,
this young guy. But I love it when he interviews these business owners and he's like, what advice would you give to people trying to become millionaires or billionaires today? And most of them, a lot of them will say, it's all about equity. It's all about ownership.
Ownership.
Like, don't make it a transaction where you make $100,000 here and then it's over. Like, you want ongoing value being created. And that's what I love about whole life insurance. It's equity. Because, you know, you and I mentioned it before we hit record, but we want to do some takeaways from a conference we went to. And one of those takeaways was just a reminder that, man, you're not buying an illustration when you get a whole life insurance policy with us. You're buying the company that created that illustration. That's what you're really buying. You're an owner of the company. And I like being an owner of companies that I trust and have been successful. And I expect to continue to be that way.
Yeah. And you're totally, well, it's related, but different. You're also buying us. You know, if you decide to work with us, it's for a reason. Whether it's you just like our personality or you like the way Dave looks in his polo shirt or me in my beat up baseball cap.
You got some scruff going on too.
I do. You know
you're
what?
Definitely
I do.
Looking yeah. retired, my friend.
Yeah. It grows so fast. I mean, you could probably hear it growing if I get really close to the mic. Yeah. It's super annoying because I don't have my softened water. I'm such a baby, spoiled, rotten, privileged American here. But I don't have a water softener at this place, and the water's not terrible, but it's it's not soft water either. And I'm used to that just buttery.
You don't have your water. RO water either, then, right?
I don't have any of that.
I was thinking about you water. Today. I was filling up my glass with some nice reverse osmosis water. And
I don't know how
Paul doesn't have this right now.
Bottled water. Like this is Deer Park, which is not a bad brand, but it's disgusting to me. And I know that the plastic chemicals have leached into the water from this
right.
bottle, however long it's been sitting there. And yeah. I'm probably slowly killing myself.
Man,
probably
what
getting
a water
way
snob.
Too into it. Yeah, we are water snobs. Not snobby about a lot of things, snobby about water and food. What goes in my body, basically.
Yeah. We had dinner with a wine snob.
Why? A lot of wine snobs in the life insurance industry, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is. Which I don't say that in a demeaning way.
No,
I'm glad somebody is because
I would just
drink swill all day because I'm not a wine snob.
I'm not. I know nothing. Yeah. Like, oh, it's a Pinot, it's red, I'll drink it.
Yeah.
The Malbec, I'll drink it. I didn't
Pinot
even know
can be
wine
too.
Could be white. Yeah. I didn't know what wine really was. As far as I probably didn't have a sip of wine before Tammy and I were married, and then I slowly started to kind of.
Yeah, I didn't really drink it either.
It's disgusting. I was like,
got a little older.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, now I drink it. If people are drinking wine, I'll have some wine. Whatever. Maybe that makes me less masculine. I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah, you're pretty manly to me.
Thank you.
Very manly.
Very manly. Okay.
I don't know where we were.
Well, we were talking about you're not buying an illustration, you're buying the company. We kind of switched off the but Eric, thank you for the question. It's a good question. We probably didn't answer it to the level that you wanted. We're not economists. We're not, it's not something we ponder a lot. But hopefully we gave you at least a different way to look at it. And allay your fears. It's just, I don't think you should be concerned about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, your family, I mean, when it comes to the death benefit, where else are you going to put money that's going to create dollars for pennies return for your family after you're gone? You still need to solve the life insurance problem, which you have term life insurance, but again, it's term.
Yep.
So you got to think beyond that. You still need, in my opinion,
you don't
permanent.
Own it. You're just renting it.
You're just renting it. You don't own it. That's for sure. You don't have any equity.
And you've probably heard our episode where we talk about how term is technically more expensive whole life.
Yep. Yep.
Weird
just
way to
scroll
think.
Down until you find that one, but that's it's just numbers. It's math.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have a note here, Dave. Life insurance improves perceived financial security.
Yeah.
That was talked about at the conference, right?
Yep. It was.
This is interesting.
In fact, so there was, a lot of studies done and they just threw some results up there for us. And throughout the study and all the interviews they did with people, one of the questions they asked, how do you rate your financial security? Do you feel financially secure or not? Well, those who had life insurance responded in the positive 62% that yes, I feel financially secure. Those without life insurance responded with 46% of confidence in, their financial security. So that's nearly a 30% swing. I mean, obviously I'm not taking 62 minus 46, I'm taking 46 plus 30% and you get about 62. So
yep,
30% more likely to feel financially secure if you have life insurance.
Right. And it's, we rode to dinner in a golf cart with another couple that wasn't part of our group during that. And we were like, oh, you need some life insurance? He was seemingly well-to-do, or they were as a couple, right? Because they're at this nice place. But they had no idea what their life insurance portfolio looked like. They didn't know what type of, you remember? They didn't know their type of policy. They didn't know whether they had whole life, universal, term. They had no idea.
Yeah, no clue.
So, you hear out there sometimes, Dave Ramsey will say whole life insurance is only for the rich and whatever, and IBC is only for wealthy people, which is, I don't know where they come up with these statements, but it's completely not.
Well, define rich and define wealthy. because you got to start there. We got to speak the same language.
Yeah, the 1% is it's quite a large margin between, you know, typical, you know, one of our clients over here and, you know, Jeff Bezos, right?
Ask somebody who makes $500,000 a year if they feel rich. They don't.
Yeah.
Guarantee it. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, so, but I thought that was interesting, that, you know, someone that well-to-do just had no idea.
Yeah.
You'd think he would be, you know, savvy on all things financial. Like, you know, we have clients that have their spreadsheets and they have their life insurance, you know, included in their little yearly update that they do, or quarterly update. Oh, there's my cash value of all my policies. And it's right in there next to their 401k or their IRA or their brokerage account, whatever. It's on the same page. That's how mine is anyway.
Yeah. It's an asset. But I thought that was a great takeaway. I mean, it's certainly true for us. I feel very financially secure. And with the more life insurance I own, the more secure I feel, and I have felt over the years.
Yeah, I used to feel when I was a client of First Command back in the day that I was like, do I really need any more? I keep buying these OPIs, $50,000 increments, and I had like 5 OPIs or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, it's another $50 a month or $80 a month. And I was just like, oh, it's money I'm never going to see again, and all these. Just a totally different mindset looking back, yeah, we were doing okay as far as protection, right? But really now, the level of protection, I was telling some clients earlier today that I have, you know, X amount of death benefit, and I still feel like I don't have enough.
Yeah, really?
And you can thank, you know, Uncle Sam and uncontrolled government spending, which, you know, has helped drive the price up of everything, including, yep, you know, most importantly, real estate for most people, and the price of vehicles and other things, and food. I spent $300 at Publix the other day.
I don't know. Yeah, everything's tripled in the last 20 years, easy.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And wages, of course, have
definitely not tripled.
And they won't. Yep. So if everyone that, you know, you want all these programs and government spending and higher salaries for this group or higher salaries for that group, just know that you might think that's helping you, but it's actually making you poorer.
100%. So it's, you know, equity isn't pulling the bottom group up to the level of the top. It's pulling the top down to the bottom. So now everybody is going to be equally as miserable.
Yep, that's right. Right?
You give it long enough and that's the way things are going. You know, I think we've seen some changes in the last 6 months that are positive, but, you know, pendulum swing, it'll swing back.
And of course, neither neither party will cut spending.
No,
like we just obviously added $3 trillion to the, we just added $3 trillion to the national debt or whatever. And, you know, to the deficit and going to hurt. It's going to hurt me and you. And our families and our children and their children and their children, if, you know, if we're still a country by then, who the heck knows? But it's just, they need to cut spending, and they won't. Neither party will cut spending. Nope. Because a lot of people, including people that I like, will complain about it.
Yeah.
So they just don't, you know, read some economics books, folks, Austrian, or maybe even the Chicago School. Read some of that stuff.
Yeah, get edumacated.
Get edumacated.
So one thing you said that hits on another thing we walked away from that conference with, you said you're not just buying the company, but you're buying us, like the agent that's working with you.
Yeah, for sure.
And by that, you're not, of course, ever going to pay us anything directly. That we get paid, compensated from the companies that we write for. We don't work for them. We write for them. But we had a conversation with somebody in the industry who's really big into AI, which I think there's a great place for AI, but he's under the belief that in the next 3 years, life insurance agents won't exist, that they'll be completely replaced by AI. So I guess I hadn't thought about it, but after giving it a lot of critical thought, you know, my thoughts are, and it goes back to what you just said, you're paying, you know, you're buying the company and who you're working with. we as human beings have an innate desire to connect with a human being.
I think so too.
And I think there's going to be a bifurcation in the population of the world where a segment goes completely AI and they just want to deal with robots. That's fine. Have at it.
Sure.
You weren't my client anyway. You weren't somebody I wanted to build a relationship with anyway, because you don't want a relationship with human beings. You want a relationship with robots. The other part of the population is going to stay with and reject a lot of that and say, I want human interaction. I want to connect with a human. When was the last time you got on a phone to call a company and you got an AI bot saying, tell me what you would like to do today? And you said anything other than speak to a representative. Like, I want to speak to a live person. Get me to a human being. I'm tired of talking to robots.
That's the insurance. First thing everybody thinks is I want to talk to a human being as soon as possible.
Right. But you got a segment of the population that's convinced that we don't need human beings to do anything. People will willingly give a robot their financial information, their family situation, what they're going through, the hardships they're going through, people going through divorces, calling in for life insurance. They're going to give all of this to, you're going to make small talk, you're going to build a relationship, you're going to build trust with a robot. Like, humans want to work with humans. So I would say, I would plead with everybody, let's reject that in other industries as well. Like, I don't want to go talk to, a car salesman. Not that people like and enjoy talking to car salesmen, but I don't want to talk to a robot. I want to talk to a human.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I dropped the truck off for service today, which I normally don't do, but I have to keep this like special warranty that they have for lifetime powertrain. I have to bring it to them every 20,000 miles. So I got 18,000 miles on that truck already. Had it since October. Anyway, but it was nice to interact with the service manager. I could tell him what was, some concerns I had and whatever. And I can't do that with a robot, and all these people that are comfortable doing that and giving their financial information to a robot and doing all these other things, that somebody is going to own that information now and sell it to the leader of the lizard people.
That's data, man. That's gone for it. You're giving them all of your data.
Data mining right there. And it's, you're just absolutely freely handing it over. And
the lizard people.
I love saying that. I just had to get the lizard people in there on the podcast. The leader of the lizard people. Who's currently serving as the governor of California. I like to think that the way I operate in this business and the way I interact with clients, that it's only I can act like me. Only you can act like you.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's what is appealing to our clients. And we're in the, I don't know how many clients we have shared now. We don't really track it that much, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you guys and love y'all, but it's, there is that human connection that a robot, unless they were just looking to do one specific thing, but it's not going to work. So I think I agree with you, and it's not because of self-preservation or whatever. I could go do something else. Mm-hmm. I could go fly to the oil rigs or something. I don't want to do any of that, but I'd go teach 10th grade history. Pre 1877 U.S. history, and I go do that or something. But that human connection is critical, especially in this. You get to learn your client. You learn, what makes them tick. You learn what their hopes and dreams and fears are. And I just don't see it working.
Yeah.
Because there's only I can be me. That's terrible English, obviously, but.
Only I can be me. Yeah.
I can't create an AI bot that will act and answer a question like me, because I never even know what I'm going to say when I'm
talking. Yeah. That's true. But I guess they can get pretty close. You can have AI write something in your voice and the way you communicate, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I think, not to mention the life insurance companies would have to do that. They'd have to authorize AI bots to bring in business versus live human beings. So
right, there's a whole regulatory environment. I'm not saying it's inevitable, but it's highly regulated by at each state. So forget the Fed.
Yeah,
insurance is mostly state, you know, state oversight. So it's,
yeah,
you're not going to have agreement across 50 different states and territories and District of Columbia. And
I think AI is coming for a lot of jobs, but I don't, I think it's going to lag on the jobs that require human interaction, face to face, where you got to communicate, you got to build trust. Like, nobody buys anything from us until they trust us.
That's right.
You know, yep. You got to build a foundation of trust. And that's why people come to us and come back to us, because they like us and they trust us.
Yep.
Hopefully.
And like I would, this. And I would say, you know, Mike Rowe nails this, you know, just to, mm-hmm. There's a shortage of quality craftsmen or people who can work with their hands, whether electricians, plumbers, carpenters. There's a huge shortage. I mean, I see it, right? I see it in the house that I'm building. I can go over to the site and be like, mm-hmm. man, I wish there was somebody else doing that. You know, but it is what it is. So yeah. I think there's going to be a huge opportunity for this current young generation to go kind of back into that and really, really do well. You know, especially if they're motivated and dedicated to build out a business, and especially what I see they're lacking, and I'm getting way off into the weeds here, but it's just the right culture, a culture of excellence and pride. You don't see that a lot anywhere anymore. I mean,
personal pride, you're going to put your name on it.
Yes.
Like every job you do, you got to put your name on it. Are you proud of that job?
I would say that the person that's working on our house, who used to be a home builder himself, you know, doesn't need to be doing, we'll put it this way, he did very well. He just does, he's 65. He just does like all the hard jobs that require thinking and like advanced carpentry skills. Mm-hmm. He's doing all that in my house. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful to have him there, but he didn't need to be there.
Yeah,
he is there because he wants to be there. And he's so full of pride and showing me, look, this is what I did. And I redid it 3 times because I wasn't happy. And I'm just like,
oh, he's a perfectionist. Well, I hope he's passing that on to an apprentice. Hopefully somebody's being apprenticed by this man.
He's got some guys that work with him, whether they're apprentices or not.
Yeah.
But inculcating a culture of excellence, and I that's what I see, you know, inside the IBC overall community for the most part is a culture of excellence. I think we've let some people into the fold that I don't know, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say that, but
right,
you know what I mean. It's mostly a culture of excellence, pride, and taking care of the client first.
Absolutely, 100%. So. All right. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this. This is a really kind of an off the wall episode where we hit on a few different things that aren't necessarily insurance related, but I think everything kind of ties back to why we do what we do and why we use the practice, the concept, and use the product that we do.
I loved it. I had a good time.
Me too. And now my wife is texting me asking if we're done. So her and the girls can come back into the house. So at that note, we'll leave it here and we'll talk to everybody next week. So it's been real. Until next week, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.